Welcome to Diamonds in the Rough Draft, a heartfelt dig through discarded drafts from our past.
I'm your co-host, Emily Anderson.
And I'm Eric Anderson. On draft this week is New Rome Brewing Company's Bavarian Prince Oktoberfest beer. While we drink our way through, we'll be working through a variety of different pieces because this is...
sort of an open mic night.
I mean, it's absolutely open mic night, but it's kind of a beginning of season 3 / end of season 2 because of the break that we took.
It's definitely a, hey, we're back.
All I'm saying is that 300 years from now, scholars will be discussing the narrative lacuna of our break. And, you know, people will be writing their term papers on it and master's theses.
I mean, we did a lot in that break.
Yeah, a lot happened. A lot of stuff went down.
What did we do?
I don't know. I don't remember exactly when the break
began.
Well, I went back to school. Yes, you're back in school.
I went back to school. Yeah. Oh, we got a dog.
We have a dog now.
She is in the room as we record this, but she's a good girl and she's being very quiet.
She is on the couch.
We just paused to admire our own dog.
That little space, that was just... canine admiration straight up. All right. Well,
we have a kindergartner now.
We do have a kindergartner now. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, getting up early in the morning, standing out of the bus stop in the rain, that's our lives now.
Yeah.
A lot
it's
of
a
that.
Good life.
Yes.
It's a good life.
But we also.
But we missed you guys.
Yes.
And we missed recording. Mostly we missed the sound of our own voices chatting each other up.
And we realized that there was only one way to get new episodes, unfortunately, and that was for us to make them.
That was not funny.
It was funny.
I laughed perfunctorily.
Well, I take your perfunctal laugh, and
I take your perfunctal
laugh, okay, and I send it back to you. Yes, write it down, please. All right, so back to this beer. I learned a lot of things while I was researching this beer.
Yeah,
one,
tell me about this beer.
I learned...
I'm late reacting because I was still writing.
All right.
But tell me about this beer.
One, I learned that much like Christmas, Oktoberfest beer begins 3 months before the actual Oktoberfest, which is nice.
I thought this was Bavarian Prince.
This is Bavarian Prince, an Oktoberfest beer.
Oh, Sam Adams doesn't have the corner on the market name of Oktoberfest?
No.
Okay, so that's a genre of beer?
Yes.
Oktoberfest.
For the Oktoberfest celebration. Are you...
We just stared at each other blankly.
Well, it's because I wasn't expecting that to be the part to take you by surprise. So now I'm realizing I may have to back up and explain what Bavaria is. And
I know what that is. Spoiler, we went to Bavaria
for our
honeymoon.
It was fantastic and great.
Actually, I was sick most of the time, so only Eric liked it.
No, you didn't get sick until we got to Germany. You were good in Bavaria.
Bavaria is Germany, sweetie. Bavaria is the region that Munich is. Bavaria is like the region of Germany in which...
Okay, no, you're right. You're right. Yeah. Yes.
He got confused because we went to Austria and Germany.
Yes,
for
we did
our
go
home.
To Austria. Okay.
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So now that we've
loved
gotten,
Vienna.
I'm gonna cut all that.
Bavaria's just okay.
If Bavaria was great, you were just sick.
It's I not actually don't really like their beer. We liked the beer in Vienna better.
We did really like the
which
Viennese
is why
beer.
You shouldn't yeah. cut that part out. You should
okay.
save a decent
beer. Alright, well we're gonna leave all of that in. But here is what everybody needs to know about Oktoberfest beer, because I learned a lot.
Tell me.
Alright. The very first Oktoberfest, unofficially, was in 1810 for the Bavarian Prince. The crown prince, whose name was Ludwig.
Of course it was.
Of course. And it was Ludwig I of Bavaria once he was crowned king, of course, in 1825.
So this is not the mad Ludwig who made the castle that we saw?
No.
Okay.
Different dude.
Schwanstein.
Different dude.
New Schwanstein.
Yes, like a Stein. Yes, this was for his marriage to Princess Teresa. No, I said that Teresa.
Teresa. Real Princess Southern. I mean, Bavaria is
Teresa,
south of Germany.
Of Saxe-Hildburghausen. Isn't that a great name?
Hildburg, not Heidelberg?
Hildburghausen. Saxe-Hildburghausen.
Hildburg. So a lot of Hilds live there,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah. So this is a...
Mathild, Clothild, Berthild.
A lot of Tilds.
Mocktils.
You, all right, now you've gotten past
now
my
I'm
knowledge.
Just showing off my name-berry nerdiness.
It's true. She spends a lot of time on that. All right. No, things that I learned about Oktoberfest that I did not know before. It popularly features a parade, which makes sense. For most celebrations, we have a parade.
Yeah, I thought all fests had parades.
But this one also has a giant horse race, which I am very confused as to why America hasn't gotten in on that, because as far as I know, the only big national horse race we ever have is the Kentucky Derby.
Well, I think that's why America's not gotten into that. I don't think horse racing is like actually much of a thing for us. That's for those weird British people, you know?
I don't
them
know.
Them Europeans.
I feel like if these horses in the Kentucky Derby train all year for one, like, 20-second race, they could at least have a second race in October where all the horses are drunk.
I
think that would be awesome. Beer for the horses. This is going to be the stand I take.
Whiskey for my man.
So another fun fact about Ludwig the First is that in 1844, he decided in a bold move that he was going to tax the beer, thus ensuing the beer riots of Bavaria, which happened for 5 days in early May. They were so awful.
What year? 1844.
Oh,
so yeah. He learned nothing from the whiskey riots.
Not at all. It's like he wasn't even paying attention.
It's like America wasn't a big deal to Bavaria.
So 4 years later, he abdicated to his oldest son because he just didn't want to anymore. It
must
was too
nice.
Much. Yep. To have an eldest son you can abdicate to?
Yeah.
Like sending our kindergartner our house bill and saying,
yeah.
Really dreaming big over here. We just want him to mow the lawn.
I would hope he'd love me enough to want to take care of me. Not that he owes that to me, but, you know.
Okay. Well, we'll get to that in a few
it
years.
It would be really great if he, you know, became a rock star. And now I have the, I want to say Nirvana, but that's not the right. Oh, man. Nickelback. Now I have the Nickelback.
Okay, well, there
song.
Is a connection between those two groups.
The end.
So. Sure. I don't know.
What is the connection? Are you not getting them confused with like Soundgarden or something?
No, but I can't remember his name, so the point is not worth making anymore.
Okay. Well, they have that song, "We All Just Wanna Be Big Rock Stars, Big
yes.
Old House and Real Fast Cars."
It's like Nickelback is in the room with
me. I think they say girls come pretty and the beer comes cheap, so it...
I think it's booze, but yes.
Well... I sort of
we all stay
back.
Skinny because we
that
just don't
might,
eat.
That might get yeah.
Yeah. All right. on that night, let's clink and drink. All right.
Okay. Wait, what notes am I supposed to get from this?
Beer.
Oh, you didn't look into
oh,
that.
I totally did. Wait, let me get my notes back up here. Yeah, on the New Realm website, Mitch went through a lot of interesting information about this.
Where is New Realm?
Atlanta.
Oh, it is in Atlanta?
Yep, down in
oh,
the city.
Look at us doing a local-ish beer.
Well, that's the premise. The basic premise.
Well, yeah. But, you know, sometimes we do.
Yeah, sometimes it doesn't work out. All right. Getting...
Sometimes we actually launch our podcast drinking Dos Equis.
It was more important to start the podcast. And it was Cinco de Mayo, so, like, we kind of had an out. I don't know. All right, so here we go. Name for Proud Prince Ludwig, the original honoree from the first Oktoberfest celebration. Bavarian Prince is a Marzen-style Oktoberfest lager brewed in the German tradition. This amber lager is malty, biscuity, and toasty, with floral hop notes.
Oh.
Be sure to note the biscuitiness.
Yeah, I was really into the biscuitiness, and then you said hops.
Although, if this is a European biscuit, then it might actually just be a cookie. So, all right, let's see what happens. Seriously.
You can't take me anywhere. That wasn't unpleasant.
It's light.
I would drink that for a fest, but don't buy it again.
That to me is the definition of a beer that is made to be drunk in large quantities.
Yeah.
It is like, I could have 24 of those, you know,
yeah,
and
yeah,
suffer
yeah.
greatly. But, yeah. you know, it's not like a darker beer where I'm going to kick it after two or a lighter beer where I'm not going to feel satisfied. It's perfect. It's right in the middle.
Okay, so this is an open mic night with a twist. We're not going to be reading rewrites of everything that we did in season two because we're not that prepared.
Well, there's only one that we're skipping from the fifth episode, but we had two guests in season two. We had Nina and we had Nikki, and we haven't brought them back to do rewrites
They're
of their own.
They're really busy with, like, really cool stuff.
Also, we haven't asked them. So, they might have rewritten it, they might not. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But we have rewritten three of our pieces from season two. Two of mine and one of Emily's. But first, before we get to any of that, Emily, what are you thinking about right now?
I don't know, Eric. What am I thinking about right now?
Well, if you could go back in time and answer that question for me.
Oh, I was informed that I'm thinking about time travel.
Yes, indeed, past
and
Emily.
And storytelling.
That is what you were thinking
because
about.
Because Eric and I are busy writing and beta reading Eric's story that involves time travel.
Yes, I'm in the middle. Well, I've written a middle grade horror science fiction novel, and it is in beta reading, and Emily's
going
through it.
If you are interested in being a beta reader, or a gamma reader, or a delta reader, or an editor, or an agent for Eric's awesome novel, please email us at the email that we will read to you at the end of this podcast. Yeah, the podcast email. Yeah.
Big pause.
I think it's Diamonds in the Rough Draft Pod.
Diamond
Rough Draft Pod at gmail.com.
Yes, that's right. So
I wasn't being sarcastic. Like, please do reach out if you are interested in doing any of those things. But especially if you're an editor or a agent. Please and thank you.
So this past weekend, my brother was visiting, so we watched a movie that I've been meaning to watch for 3 years, which is Christopher Nolan's Tenet.
We've also been rewatching Doctor Who because it's one of our favorites and we rewatch it basically once every 2 years.
Yeah, we also didn't feel quite as bad watching it because
it's British and it's on HBO, which seems like a less bad streamer.
And
at time of recording, WAG and SAG-AFTRA are still on strike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At this point.
Which we fully support.
Yeah. So
labor forever.
So in a very basic act of commiseration, we watch Doctor Who. I don't know. We're over.
And not commiseration. We genuinely enjoy Doctor Who and do rewatch it every 2 years.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah. Yes. Okay, so we got time travel on the brain.
Yeah,
so I tried to make a little list of those things that have used time travel to great significance in my life that I have seen, including Doctor Who, Tenet, the Harry Potter third book.
Oh yeah,
which they promptly forgot about, and we do not discuss the Cursed Child, the Outlander series, and then
Outlander. When did you read Outlander?
It was significant because you made me watch like 2 seasons of it.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
How did you like it?
I did not.
You did not like it.
Everybody gets molested all the time. Everybody gets molested and then they time travel.
But it's so romantic,
Eric.
It's
not romantic at all. It's awful. Do not support. Stop the molestation.
I think I was mostly just there for the things I was learning in scare quotes about Scottish culture.
Yeah,
I think that's what I was actually there for.
We could have just gotten you a textbook. That would have been fine. Umbrella Academy, and then, of course, the Avengers movie, which they only had two outs.
I'd forgotten about that.
They only had two outs for Endgame. One was time travel, and one was multiverse. And they kind of did time travel with a little bit of multiverse.
It has been so long since we saw that movie, I don't actually remember. That's from, like, deep in the COVID times.
Yeah. So,
which feels like time travel in and of itself.
So now we're trying to figure out, if we are writing a story, how do we approach time travel? Because there's two schools of thoughts. Like, do you really, really explain it? Do you delve deep into it? Or do you kind of leave it timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly, and just let the audience patch the holes themselves?
What do you mean really explain it? Because all of these examples you've given They explain how it happens. You don't know why it happens, but you know how it happens.
Not necessarily. It's mostly ambiguous. You know, you walk through these magical stones and you are time traveled. We don't know why. Right?
But that's what I just said. I asked, do you mean why or do you mean how? Because in most story, you don't necessarily need to know why. It's enough to know how. But they know how they're time traveling in Outlander. They walk through the magical stones.
Okay, so I guess, you know, getting deeper into it, getting into the mechanics, hard science fiction, where you're actually going through like, all right, this is how the time stream bends. This is how you bounce off a black hole. I don't know.
I don't think I've ever read or watched a story that explained why like that. I mean, in Doctor Who, he just has a time machine. You don't really know how it works. You just know that that's how they are time traveling. Same thing with Harry Potter. I mean, they have the out of just being like, it's magic. But like, that's still not really telling you why it's working like that.
Yeah.
They've just got this time turner device, and that is how they time travel.
Do you think anybody could actually ever explain it, or would it get too?
I think it would bog down the story. Nobody really cares, because we all know it's extremely improbable. Oh, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh, also, yeah, another good one. Yep.
Yeah. Hot dog fingers. You're welcome. that makes me want a hot dog real bad. Who is that horror person that was like, you should never let them see the monster? It's better to let them fill in the gaps. I think it's the same with time travel. We all know, like I said, it's completely improbable. So it's just a escapist fantasy. So you don't really want to spend that much time thinking about how it's working. I mean, how did you approach it in your novel?
I try to explain it while also keeping it vague. So, like, you try to set up the rules for the universe in which you are writing. The time travel has to work in the world, and it has to work by the rules of, like, the Earth's rotation. It has to work by our calendar. Leap years have to be taken into effect. You know, all of the same rules that apply to us, seconds, minutes, hours, still apply to the time travel. And if you are a time traveler, those are the kind of things that you have to take into consideration. And therefore, it's really difficult. Like, in my books, you can't move through both space and time. You can only move through time, because the significance of being able to do both is just too much. It's too heavy.
Gotcha. Okay.
So yeah, so I tried, and that's one of the reasons that I think this has been on my mind, is I did try to apply a little bit more logic and quote-unquote realism to the function of time travel than I feel like a lot of media does.
So at the moment, besides for Doctor Who and of course your book, my favorite time travel stories are actually in a lot of these Korean webtoons that I've been reading. I may not correctly understand the terms, but I'm going to do my best. I believe these time travel books, or like travel books, are usually called isekai. That's I-S-E-K-A-I. In English, of course, it's rendered something differently in Japanese or Korean or Chinese or whatever. But there's two big flavors. There's the one where they die in the real world and they wake up in a novel or a video game that they were reading or playing as a character in that world. Sometimes there's time travel. Like, sometimes they have to, you know, they fail and have to start back at the beginning, for lack of a better. But there's other ones within that genre where, you know, the character has a really sad death at the beginning, and through magic or the blessing of a god or goddess, they're sent back in time. You know, their spirit is sent back to their body 10 years before, and they're given the chance to try to fix everything with all the foreknowledge that they had from that. And so those are kind of straddling that line, too, of saying how or why. I mean, most of them, they don't know. They just wake up. Which is why I'm like, I don't really think you need to worry too much about how the time traveling is happening or it's why it's just happening. Yeah, it's just happening.
Or it's whatever device they are using. I find it really interesting that, like, that premise is such a premise that it is an entire genre of this medium.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. I love it. I wish it would show up more in Western media. Like, it's actually, seeing how prolific it is in the manhwa scene, I do find it interesting that it's not that prevalent in, like, Western literature. Because it's so good. It's so interesting. And, I mean, you've got, it's like a joke within some of these more recent ones. Like, the classic trope is that you're killed by a truck coon. You're hit by a truck and you wake up in the novel or your video game. And, like, some of them that I've read that are more recent are like, I had the classic got hit by a truck, woke up in my video game experience. They really don't feel like you have to think that hard. You know, some of them will be like, oh yeah, the god in this world pulled your soul out of that world because you were the perfect soul for the algorithm. Some of them are like, you're playing the video game and they're like, hey, we're beta-ing, you know, a special new feature update. Do you want to be one of our betas? And they're like, yeah. And then they're sucked into the game. And they're like, I didn't sign up for this.
Sorry, you Jumanji.
I think I just saw one where she's like the, she's like a coder for this game. And she's in the, not Q&A, quality control. She's in the quality control department trying to work through the bugs, and one bug is so bad that it pulls her in to the world.
That is a very bad bug.
Yeah.
You can't imagine.
Really bad computer.
You imagine
bug.
Microsoft Office being so bad one day that it just sucked you into Excel. you're in a spreadsheet.
I imagine that would look a lot like the original Tron.
Yes, you are on one plane of existence. Sorry. Ride your motorbike. So, well, that's interesting. Yeah, that... So, I'm trying to think of other media that have this, or other ways, because I feel like time travel as a deus ex machina can often just be kind of trite, you know? The person is in an unwinnable situation, and the bad guy cannot be defeated, but... lo and behold, oh wait, we can time travel, so all I have to do is go back in time, and now there's two of us, and we can team up against the bad guy, and we're going to win. Like, how, if you have the power of time travel, can you ever really lose unless the guy you're fighting against also has time travel?
I do feel like there's more nuance to it than that, because reality is made up of the decisions of so many people in tandem with each other. And there's so much of that that you can't know or anticipate. That's part of the... I'm sorry to keep bringing it back to the isekai, but guys, it's like all I've been reading recently besides Eric's book. So in a lot of them, like, once they've made a big change happen... mm-hmm. Then all their foreknowledge is gone. And they're kind of having to just guess how people will react. And in some ways, like, they know the character of the people around them really well. And they can predict how they'll happen. And their chess match is really easily winnable. But in others, the changes in themselves that are affecting changes in their decisions and changes in the happenings also change the characters around them, and they become unpredictable.
Hmm. I guess in the examples that you're giving, there is only one act of time travel. They die.
Well, I've read a couple where, like, it's a big spell that someone had cast, and so there's two or three people who are aware that time travel has happened. But they don't always remember why.
Yeah.
Or they're not always the one who cast it. There's this one I was reading where, like, she dies, so her dad... but she was supposed to be the, like, Harry Potter of that world. But her dad didn't realize that until after she died and the world went to shit. So her dad hires a magician to cast the spell to turn back time. So the magician, she, and her dad are all aware that they've traveled back in time. But the magician is only aware that he cast the spell. He can't remember who he did it for. He's got to go find them. So he finds her eventually because he realizes that she's just kind of obvious. But the dad knows that they're back in time, but he can't remember why. He knows that he was the reason it happened, but he can't remember his big revelation, you know.
Yeah.
And the daughter knows that she's back in time, but she doesn't know why she was sent back in time. But, like, she knows that she was wrongfully killed.
So the author of these is using convenient amnesia along with the time travel to bring tension to the story.
Yeah.
It's interesting. So I was just reminded of, like, these other two pieces where it's singular time travel, right? The first is, you know, Mark Twain, a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's court,
yeah,
which is, you know, 19th century normal dude gets sent back to King Arthur's court and hijinks ensue. And he has to figure out, and he just has to survive. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
There
are paradoxes all over the place in that one because he's trying to introduce various technology like hundreds of years beforehand. Yeah. Which paradoxically would mean that technology would be super different hundreds of years later.
But the opposite is this Cartoon Network Toonami show from when I was growing up called Samurai Jack.
Never saw it.
It was fantastic. You would have loved it. No, you would have hated it. But still, it was fantastic.
So like Johnny
it
Bravo.
Was a, no, it was much less crass. It was more violent. You know, he has a sword, but it was artsier. Jenny Tartakovsky was the same person who did Dexter's Laboratory and like one of the big names in Cartoon Network at this time. So Samurai Jack is like in Japan at some point. I'm not going to try to put a time period on it, but he's fighting this demon named Aku, and he has a magic sword that can defeat Aku. And to defeat him, the only thing that Aku can do is fling him forward in time, like thousands of years. So this is Jack's journey through the future, where like dogs have sentience and can talk, and you have cars rolling around, and it's just like, it is the future, and he's trying to get back to the past.
Okay.
So, and that's the whole thing. So it was the complete opposite scenario. Nothing he's doing has any ripples anywhere besides the future that he is then living in.
Yeah.
And, like, Aku is still living and, you know, is trying to stop him from getting back to the past because he knows if he can get back to the past, this 3,000 years of living will not have been lived.
Oh, Heroes. Heroes is another one that had time travel. Or did
Probably.
You make it to that
No. I do remember there being some time travel. I think that was when I stopped watching.
That is also when I stopped watching because I just couldn't under... So when Eric and I first met, you know, you start chatting up, like, what shows are you watching? What books are you reading? All of that stuff. And I'm someone who, when I love someone very much and, like, really want to be able to engage with them, I will go deep on whatever they say they're reading. So I'm reading webtoons right now because my sister got into them and I wanted to be able to talk to her about stuff. I went way deeper than she did, as I did with Heroes. So Eric's like, oh yeah, I've been watching this show, Heroes. Keep in mind this show had been off the air for like 8 years at this point. because that came out when I was in like sixth grade.
Yeah.
And I was a senior in college when I met Eric.
I was watching it because it was all streamable.
Yeah. Hulu was just becoming a thing. I mean, Netflix was already, but Hulu was becoming a bigger thing. So Eric's like, yeah, I'm watching this show. It's called Heroes. And I was like, I remember people saying that was good. It's got the guy from Gilmore Girls. I'm going to go watch it. So, you know, 2.5 seasons in, you know, 5 days. In 5 days, I watched 2.5 seasons. We have our next date, and I'm like, you know, I know you said you really liked Heroes, but I'm halfway through season 3, and I just can't follow the story. And Eric looks at me, and he's like, oh yeah, I've only, like, 4 or 5 episodes into season 1.
I was really into it. However, I had other stuff going on. And so I think I did finally catch up to where you stopped. But yeah, that's a very good representation. I'm pretty sure I got through the end of season 2. Maybe I didn't start season 3. But yeah, that's how we do things. Emily jumps in, goes
super hard,
and then
goes balls to the wall,
and then just forgets about it. And that's fine.
Did I say that right? Did I apply that phrase right? Balls to the wall.
Yeah, but I don't actually know what that means, and I'm worried it's
indecent.
Yeah, I don't know why the balls are against the wall. And now I'm concerned.
They're basketballs, obviously.
Have you played basketball? That's not what you're supposed to do. All right,
dodgeball. Also, tennis? Not that.
No. In general. Ping pong. In general, balls should not
pickleball.
Be on the wall.
Racquetball. Racquetball, balls to the wall?
Yeah, I guess. Is that a racquetball reference?
That's what I'm hoping now.
All right. We won't Google it, but we're just going to suggest a racquetball reference.
If Balls to the Wall offended you, we're sorry. We didn't know it was indecent. We'll just put that disclaimer in there.
Yeah, we were actually making a racquetball reference. Fair What's dudes. Wrong with you, all right, taking our racquetball reference indecently? So.
Well, that was wonderful.
Thank you for sharing that with us.
Now, before you're reading a wrong part of the thing.
Oh, yes, I definitely was.
Now, before you give us the dramatic reading, tell us. Oh, we've already done this because this is the open mic. So
yeah,
we're not going to go down.
Well, but you still have to do the dramatic reading. So what we're going to do, because it's open mic night, we're going to read the original and then we are going to read the new version. So I'm going to go first. The original poem that I read was episode 1 of season 2. It was my poem Quirk, which I wrote when I was in college.
And now, a dramatic reading!
A dramatic reading! Quirk. Would you
like? This is very serious.
It's not a visual medium, Emily. They can't see your face.
I'm so serious.
She's very serious right now. She's making hand motions of seriousness.
All right. Silly? Serious.
All right. So this was my original version. Quirk. Their group meets every second Thursday alongside a burning fire engine, and they discuss the world for hours on end, all listening intently to the words of teachers and philosophers who lie, and painters who refuse to buy a brush. Two men who know they're insane listen and nod at the doctor's complaints, while three men, one blind, one mute, converse about the day's weather and all the different shades of blue. And a fat man devours a salad roasted on a stick. When darkness casts long shadows over them, they pull on gloves that freeze off hands and tip umbrellas, leaking down their necks those drips from the thirsty treetops. When the moon sets, the place abandons them. They go their separate ways until the time when the world discusses them for hours on end. That was the first one. Yay, little Eric in college. All right, so I looked at it, and a lot of the feedback that I got from this is what and why and how. So what I tried to do is put a little bit more reason into it and keep the quirkiness while actually trying to say something.
Because the reality of the original was like something dashed off in 20 minutes before class.
No,
right?
I just didn't think through. I wanted to play silly games with words and imagery. Okay. Like I had this image. It was all inspired from the image of a fire truck on fire. And I thought, what can I do with that?
Okay.
That's
okay.
Silly. And let's do something with it.
Okay.
So this is my application and taking all of the feedback and then trying to come up with something else. I left it the same name because I'm terrible at making names and Emily hasn't told me a better name yet. So let's see what she comes up with at the end of this episode.
Oh, man, the pressure.
I know, right? So, all right. Quirk, again.
quirk, Mach 2.
Mach 2? That's not what Mach means.
Isn't it? No. Make 2?
Mach, like, let's go Mach 3. Mach 4! Like, the speed you go in a jet?
Is that what that means?
No, that's not what that means. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Well, this does seem like it'll be faster.
It's actually much longer. Okay, all right. Enough of your jet talk, lady. All right. Quirk Part 2.
Part 2.
Right, there you go. In the Downside Up, they meet every seventh Thursday of the month. All the rest of us will watch the plays they game. The burning fire engine tutor-roots its melted horn. They then debate which way the world will spin. Who are these people, you may ask? Teachers and philosophers who lie, for truth was never taught to them. Painters who refuse to buy a brush, for purchasing is not true art. And some without profession or renown, somehow got in and won't depart. It isn't clear why all of them are men, or why they're so proud of the fact. Taking stage, two men who know they're mad tap dance up and down the fourth wall to try to show the audience their folly. From our couches, we applaud. Several slip on blindfolds for the judging. Brushless painters, paintless art, magnificent and unoriginal. The lunch is served at stroke of midnight. Expensive salads roasted on a stick. They pull on gloves that freeze off hands when darkness casts its shadows, long and thick. The players shout so quietly, their praises and awards of punishment. Drunken on the moonlight song, they dig their holes and plant their empty heads. The topless necks sing lullabies, terrifying all of us to bed.
I like it. Oh. Thank you. I like it better than the original. I think there's still some work to be done just to concise it up a little bit. But I like the... You're like actually saying something. Instead of just playing something.
Yes. So I was still trying to take those same ideas. But the general vibe that I was trying to get is, after watching a lot of politicians talk about being politicians, was the amount of time that we spend watching people do nothing or play games at doing something.
Well, and I was also... Some of your lines brought to mind the AI trailers that we've been seeing, which are not art. They are plagiarism, point of fact. But
So, did you get inspired for a title? Anything in there?
Jabberwocky.
Oh, interesting. It's like I've heard that. I could go Walker Jabby. It's okay. You don't have to have an answer. I was just wondering if something struck you.
Maybe paintless art or magnificent and unoriginal.
That would be fun.
Magnificent and unoriginal in the Downside Up they meet. Like if it was one of those titles that also doubled as a first line.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I could do that.
Yeah. So I'm going to put a star by this.
And a note that says title.
2?
Excellent. Okay. All right, so that was my first one. Now
thank
it is...
Thank you for your dramatic reading.
Why, you're welcome. And thank you for clapping for my dramatic reading.
You're welcome.
Yes. All right. What will you be reading for us?
Well, the original is What the Tales Forgot to Mention. I'm sorry, I just misread this. Apparently, it's What the Tales Forget to Mention. More active voice.
Indeed, yes. Yeah,
okay. What the Tales Forget to Mention.
Mach 4!
You 7, don't judge me. Your warnings only make me more curious, so I will open the door every time. Yearning to taste the crisp sweetness on my tongue, to let it fill my belly and warm my heart. I can't imagine how quickly the dizziness comes, or what a fearful sleep comes after. Old woman, don't rebuke me. Your chastisements fall on deaf ears. I will still run to let my hair tumble down, waiting impatiently as he climbs up. My heart knows only that he found me. You can't scare me with how long the fall is or the agonizing miles I'll wander alone. Bright fairy, don't wave your wand over me. Your best intentions won't protect me. My hand will still stretch to grasp the needle, its stinging pain and drop of blood, promising someday I'll re-enter reality. Right now, I don't understand all the time I'll lose, or the disappointments of dreams that can't come true. You can't warn me away with this fear. No path will keep me from finding my wolf, and no basket you bestow can protect me. I will drop everything and run to him, letting his eyes fill my soul and my mind, though he might swallow me up in the end.
Oh man, I was trying so hard.
You were. You're doing a great job. It was very dramatic.
I mean, it's a very teenage angsty poem, yes. So I wanted to
give it some angst.
Yeah. If you're wanting a refresher on the background of this, it was a teenage angsty poem. I don't think this was after I broke up with Whittle. I think this was after I broke up with Bob. Yeah.
Classic.
Yeah. I got even more angsty after that. Yeah. So here's my rewrite.
Yes.
Eric gave me a lot of feedback the first time that I felt was more applicable to a short story, which I liked but never wrote. So see what I did with the new poem. What the Tales Say. You seven warned me about opening doors, but what about opening texts? The crisp sweetness of sparkling conversation and the dizzy deflation of an unsought dick pic. Old witch, you built your walls so tall, but nothing escapes the Wi-Fi's reach. No towers must be breached to swipe right on a profile worth coming down for. Bright fairy, you sent me back to dance, unfiltered, unedited, until midnight chimes out. And he did love me, without artifice, planting his barefoot kiss on my lips in the moonlight. Grandma, no warnings will keep me on the path. Basket in hand, I go to make my own way, risking everything to run with my wolf, though he might swallow me whole in the end.
Yeah, so a lot of the feedback that you got the first time around was trying to pick either a theme or a princess to write. And one, this is a lot shorter, like you condensed down each princess to four lines and cut out a lot of the fluff. And each one...
And the teenage angst, hopefully.
I mean, yes. And then you modernized it. You know, we have technology now, and we get to see how that is affecting things. So it was also a lot more upbeat.
Yeah, right? That was my biggest intention. I had a really hard time rereading some of these because they were so cynical. And it was hard to remember being in a place where I felt so cynical. I still feel very cynical about other things, but not about love. Not about love. I was hoping to approach more of an ambivalent range, you know, some good, some bad about dating. I mean, I also just haven't dated in 10 years, so I don't really know. I'm not really that hip on the technology. Almost said not hip on the techno.
Yeah, that's not what anybody says. No. Not just the kids.
I'm not hip on the techno, yo.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay, well, I like it. I do like it, and I feel like it has a more coherent theme.
Thanks.
And it's very much like, you know, the kind of the feedback that you got the first time around. Like you said, that's a different story or a different poem. You've put something together that is unique and original to itself. But the first thing that you wrote could still spawn other editions.
You could
have an entire, what are those called, chapbook of just version 1, 2, and 7 of this same theme.
Yeah, I actually do really like that idea. It's not included in what I read, but there are actually like further takes that sort of were that idea, that were part of this original poem that I just cut out for time because it was just kind of saying the same thing over and over and over again. Because when you're 16, there's only so many ways to say some things.
Well, I don't think...
Well, and you only know so much.
Well, and publishers haven't gotten tired of remakes of fairy tales, and I don't think readers have either. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there's always a different way to take it. Even if it's just in the spirit of a grim fairy tale, then that's still fine.
If you really enjoyed this poem, I would recommend The Rose and the Beast by Francesca Leah Block. It is freeform poem, short story retellings of fairy tales. They're very good, and it is what inspired the original poem that I wrote.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's neat. So, well, okay, yes, thank you for reading that.
You are welcome.
Now we have my second piece. Second piece! I don't know what I was supposed to do at the end of that drum roll.
Second piece!
Reference?
Second piece!
Okay.
It is now.
Yeah. This one was from our third episode of season 2, which was called Tempest. It was another...
Tempest.
Tempest.
Were you reading Shakespeare?
No! Funny enough. I called it Tempest because I wrote it after it rained.
Oh, so you also weren't watching Wishbone?
Not in college.
Did you see that episode?
If I did, it's not deep in my memory. Oh. The episodes of Wishbone that really got in were Phantom of the Opera. Rip Van Winkle was very important. I saw that one a lot.
Yeah. They did a Tom Sawyer one. Weirdly, they did Tom Sawyer and not Huckleberry Finn that I remember.
I don't think that's weird at all. I think I know why they did that.
Elaborate?
Because of the race tensions. It's hard to do. I mean,
that would have been funny to have Wishbone as Jim.
Is Wishbone going to be Jim or is Wishbone going to... Because like showing the slave as a dog is not a good look. But also having Wishbone and then like Jim, and it's just like, I don't know, there's a lot of tensions in that. Or is he like chasing after them?
But in doing Tom Sawyer, the literary kids show fell for Mark Twain's trap. You know?
No, we've talked about this before. Tom Sawyer is the Hobbit to Huckleberry Finn's Lord of the Rings. Like, it is the kids' fluff piece intro to the main epic segment.
It's not an intro. Tom Sawyer is a monster.
Yes, but in the book, Tom Sawyer, it is written for children about a child who is not a good kid. But it's done in such a silly, lighthearted way that it's not supposed to be taken seriously.
He's a monster. If you didn't know that, he's a monster.
He is. He needs a strong parental
hand. Well, he's an entitled racist white kid from 1800s America. And he's a monster.
Okay.
He was written to be a monster antithesis to Huckleberry Finn.
Yeah.
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 All that being said, why don't we get back to your poem?
Okay, I shall. So this is called Tempest. I believe I said this when we read it the first time. Totally wrote this because I knew I had to have a poem ready for class, and it was raining. And so I wrote a poem. Funny enough, it is raining right now. There's a thunderstorm outside. Yeah. So if you hear any thunder, it is either Emily's rage or thunder.
That feels like a below the belt, sir.
Well, just you're not allowed to get angry now. Thunder.
I hope we're as funny as we think we're being.
Tempest. Okay. Tempest. The darkened evening winds begin and the air becomes a waterfall. Ground barraged by earthbound clouds, the world drowning over water. Swaying trees lick the sky to taste the streams of golden lightning strikes, spreading around a primal scent like when the earth began. See, it's about the rain. That's what I was doing.
I just feel like you missed an opportunity to use petrichor, which is a word we know very well.
That is only after the rain. Right? Isn't that the smell?
I think it might actually be before.
Smell before the rain? Yeah. Either way, this was during the rain. There's no smell during the rain. Just water in your nose. All right, here we go. So I have redone this, rebranded it, redone it, and it is now called, I even titled it myself, it is now called Out Front. Out Front. Every decade or so, the strong winds come to break the south. Dark evenings creeping in at all unnatural hours, gently pushing at the willow in the backyard. We'd planted it too close. But what purpose were the draping curtain branches if Mother couldn't see them from the window? When the leaves lifted, on the edges of those adolescent branches, like the fringe of my hair on swings or carousels, my father would go on out front to see if he could spot the storm. I've learned since then that this was madness, that knowing the sheer power inside those winds should have kept us all indoors, tucked away beneath the stairs with pillows and my radio tuned to static, because, as Father said, when storms would come, the world flipped. The static became clear, and music got lost inside the rain. My job was to have it ready with the flashlights and the extra batteries. I made it as cozy as I could, like bears in their den at winter. But never once did all of us climb inside. I suppose we all could fit. Lightning dripped down towards Earth, as slow as everybody else, too hot in August to strike proper. My father went outdoors, and that time, I felt old enough. I went out too. The den stayed empty under the stairs. We looked for spiral clouds from our front porch. So much water fell, the roof felt almost blasphemous, shutting out the flood. And since Father didn't seem afraid, even after all of that, I decided I wasn't really, too. We just stood there, smelling fire on the rain and water from the roof, digging trenches in the earth, being not afraid.
I do really love this one. I think it's one of the best ones you've read on your podcast. On your podcast.
On my podcast.
On our podcast. Huzzah! It's one of my favorites that you've written. It's so clear. I don't know. All of the training at university that I received is like, you want to be hyper specific.
Mm-hmm.
Like the snippier snippet of a moment in time you can tell, the better. There's a very clear story to inhabit.
Yeah. Yeah, which the first one definitely didn't have. The first one had all of the imagery, and that was it. Just imagery and kind of not even a feeling, but kind of a vibe.
You know, I think that the best way to metaphor is not the right word. The best analogy I could give is... you know that museum that we went to the other day and we saw that special exhibit about the family going west? But mm-hmm. she had these charcoal drawings that were like studies for the bigger painting. The Tempest one was like a study for this poem.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. I think that's right, because it was incredibly short. I took some of the same ideas.
You were figuring out images that you liked that you could then weave into this story.
Which is a really good way to think about this. You know, a lot of the stories that we wrote when we were younger, poems that we wrote, or just notes in the margins, we've been able to turn into larger stories.
Yeah.
And yeah, if we look at it from the artist's perspective, those were just thoughts that we were trying to get down and
study. A study from a drawing or painting perspective, as I understand it, I am by no means a trained... I am an artist because I'm a writer, but I'm not a trained artist. but my understanding is that they'll do those so that they can really nail down what they want that part of the composition to look like and practice it before they do the bigger composition and put it all together.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they can be more confident at that part before mm-hmm. they do it.
No, I like that. I do.
Yeah.
I wrote in a very similar way. I had written this scene about, it was based off of the scene from Richard III, where you have these murderers who are in this conversation with each other about whether or not they should commit the murder. And then they do the murder.
Yeah.
I loved that scene. And so I wrote my own little scene. And it was just compact. It was all in itself, kind of doing the same thing. And I liked it and I held on to it. And then the first novel that I wrote was this high fantasy novel, and I had this scene where there's these two town guards, and I realized I could apply that earlier one to this.
Yeah.
So I rewrote it for, you know, they weren't murders anymore, they were town guards, and they were trying to find this runaway, and I just was able to place it into that story because I already had it written. And I guess that kind of thing happens.
Yeah. By the way, Eric has now finished 3 full novels. I have. Get this guy a contract.
I think they're getting better, too, which is important.
So if anything he's ever written is interesting to you, oh, publisher or editor or writer's agent, please email at us.
Just throw that email at us, folks. Do it. Use the electronic mail system on the interwebs.
That was delightful. I'd love to keep talking, but your glass is empty and my brain is full. Thank you for sharing your rewrite today.
And thank you for sharing your rewrite today. It was a pleasure to hear.
Dear listener, if you have any edits, thoughts, or suggestions on this rough draft, you can find us on Instagram as Diamonds in the Rough Draft or by email at diamondroughdraftpod@gmail.com.
If you or someone in your life is interested in having a draft on this podcast or joining as a guest, please reach out. If you happen to be Neil Gaiman or Gale character, please reach out quickly.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Diamond in the Rough Draft.
This is Eric Anderson.
And this is Emily Anderson. Have a great time and don't edit under the influence.
All works read on Diamonds in the Rough Brass Broadcast.
Our original works and are not to be reproduced or distributed in any form without the express written permission of the author. All works of fiction on this podcast are products of the author's imagination and any resemblance to actual events, places, or persons, living or dead, is entirely coincidental.
You just copywrote my copyright.
I don't think that's what happened.
I'm suing.